this week on The Inside Flap.
My father was a cook. He had his own restaurant in San Diego. So I'm really into the culinary scene, and also because I'm Chinese, you know, food is really important to us.
Sure.
So I was traveling in Turkey and I was hungry for bacon, and you know, you can't get bacon because it's a Muslim country.
Yes.
And that got me started thinking about food taboos. Mm. Why would a culture or a religion forbid a very nutritious meat that also happens to taste pretty good?
I taste damn good, yes. He
just has a lot going, the one woman said.
Oh.
He just has a lot going on in his up in his head there.
Ooh.
And the other woman's like, yeah.
That's not good.
And she's like, I actually like him. And the other lady's like, yeah, I actually like him too. And then I pipe up, I say, it's usually not a good sign when you say, I actually like them. It means nobody really likes them.
You said
and
that?
So I said that.
Did they get quiet?
They shoot me a look. Not yet.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast Inside Chat Edition today. Thank you for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the table here in the Snack Shack, dodging the 100-degree heat outside, is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
Howdy. How is that green pool looking for you, Chat?
Not so great, Dave.
Not so great. Thanks for joining us. And we got a great show for you today. We're joined today by internationally best-selling author Tess Gerritsen, author of the Rizzoli and Isles series that spawned the TNT TV series of the same name. Had a great chat with Tess, and we will have that conversation for you in just a second. But first, went to the eye doctor the other day. Mm-hmm. So went over there just for a checkup. Had to get some new contact lenses and need a new pair of glasses since my last pair is approximately 27 years old. So it was, and they're only for emergency when I don't have good contacts or whatever. So I don't wear them all the time, but needed a new pair to have on hand just in case something happens. And also needed new contacts. Now, this was a location I hadn't been to before, and, well, first of all, I walk in there, and it's like one of these, you know, it's an eyeglass place, so it's a big...
Like a Pearle Vision Center?
I know, like what you would... perfect, yes, a Pearle Vision Center. Picture
Aren't
that.
Aren't you surprised they're still around? I don't know
do
why.
Do they still have them?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
Okay, that does surprise me for some reason.
Gone the way of, some of those airlines...
Yeah,
like
Blockbuster.
The People's Express.
Right.
Or
Blockbuster
that?
Video.
Yeah.
People's Express, yeah.
Yeah, People's Express, Blockbuster, and I feel like Pearle should have.
But they used to have America's Best Contacts and Eyeglasses.
I don't think that.
Yeah, that's gone.
Well, maybe not.
Well, walk in there, and first of all, everybody who's working there, and they've got a couple people, you know, clustered around desks, people helping other people and whatnot. Well, they're all wearing masks. Which I wasn't, I shouldn't be surprised, and it's fine because I guess COVID is on the rise again. But everybody's wearing a mask. I didn't really think too much of it. The woman said, you're here for, 11:30 appointment.
Like everybody in the store, even the...
Only the people working there.
Okay.
But there were like five people working there.
Yeah. It's coming back.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about that as I'm waiting for the doctor to call me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going around the store trying on every single pair of frames. I'm like, wait a second. Nobody's swooping in here and sanitizing these frames as I set them back. Because I had a lot of...
But
listen,
you don't get COVID from the touching. You get it from the breathing.
I know you don't. But
you get other things from the touching.
You get other things from the touching. And that's all I kept thinking about. Because I had a lot of time. It was 30 minutes before the doctor even saw me. And it wasn't even the doctor that saw me first. You know, it's the...
Technician or whatever.
Technician is a good word. They have a hygienist in the dentist office. I don't know what they call them in there. But anyway...
I think hygienists are probably more highly skilled than whatever it is.
Maybe.
Right?
Well, I'll tell you and you tell me. Because I'll tell you about my experience with the quote-unquote technicians. So after I'm done smearing a bunch of germs all over my face.
Like, I could be a technician at an eyeglass place.
I think so too.
Correct me if I'm wrong, listeners.
Well, they call me back there, and it's two women, and one of them is training the other one. You got...
Oh, okay.
I got... And that was clear right off the bat. You got...
So there's some training.
The lady... There's training. I don't know how good the training that was going on, but there is some training. So she was probably in her late 70s, but she was the trainer, by the way, not the trainee.
Okay. My eyebrows just shot straight up to the ceiling.
No, the other woman was probably in her, you know, mid-20s.
Okay.
And she was the trainee.
Her replacement.
I don't know if it was a replacement, but that's probably, you know, give it the old eye test, if you'll pardon the pun. And that's what it appears to be.
She's you two, young lady, could work here for 50 years.
But they were both very pleasant women. And the first thing they do is they take you to that one machine. And what I used to love to do... You know the machine would test the eye pressure,
mm-hmm.
and they shoot a little puff of air into your eye. Well, what I used to love to do is they would shoot that puff of air into my eye, and I would go, grab my eye and
rock really? Back.
Oh, yeah. And to great consternation from the technicians, but I was there cracking up laughing. I was afraid that I might give this woman a heart attack, so I decided to forego my usual gag, and they did the eye pressure. Then they do, you know, your peripheral.
How is your peripheral?
100%.
Because I feel like
She commented on how
great, good it is?
Yes, she commented.
You just
on
are
it.
Choosing not to see me.
That's
okay.
Right. There you go. Perfect peripheral vision. Absolutely perfect.
Your Baltimore can't handle peripheral.
Then, yeah, okay, hon. Then they take me. Then they give me the spiel, and the trainer says, "Okay, do you want to give him the talk now? Do you want to give him the?" I'm like, "What the talk?
What's
going on?" And the trainee starts telling me about. Now listen, what they used to do, and what we can still do, is we put drops in your eyes.
Oh,
to
the dilate.
Dilate
yeah,
your
or you
eyes.
Can pay like $40 and get the test.
Well, it's $59.
Is it
now.
Really?
There's a whole spiel she gives me, and then it's
I've
like
I've had that spiel.
And then the trainee. Or the trainer jumps in and say, I like to tell them that it gets all the way around and back of the eye, too. So they're seeing 200% of the eye. And so the trainer...
It does. And the last time I had that done, though, I had a problem. And it kind of stopped me. Like, I wasn't able to get what I needed done. And then I had to go back in to check. So it was almost like... And she's like, oh, have you had some head trauma recently? And I was like, no.
Head trauma?
Yeah, because there was something that was slightly red.
Well, let me tell you what happened to me with this machine.
And then I had to go back and check.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, yeah, any head trauma? Car accident? Did you hit your head really hard?
I think it's a scam.
And I said, no. And she's like, well, you know, even a sneeze.
What?
A sneeze.
A sneeze?
It's like, I'm not sneezing like... I'm
who's
not that
getting
kind
a head
of sneezer.
Trauma from a sneeze.
Yeah.
I know baseball players who've thrown out their backs from a sneeze.
And
though.
Then I was forced to go back to make sure it was okay. And then I had to pay another whatever it is to go back.
Well, I might have to,
and
too.
And Dave, I'm going to let you know.
Yeah.
Everything is fine.
Oh, shocker. What? Are you serious? Because the deal with this machine is you lean in, and if you lean too far, it's the little target turns red.
Yes.
Too far back, it's blue. Mm-hmm. So I'm leaning in.
Yeah, hover.
Hovering. I'm back too close. But sure. It starts just flashing, and it starts zapping me with the bright light because mm-hmm. they get to take the picture, and it's mm-hmm. like a flash going off right
in
your
eye.
Yeah,
you got to hold your eyes open.
And they're like, try again. I lean back up.
Is it your eyelashes?
I'm too far
in.
You
have great eyelashes.
And I lean back again. And the second it turns, it's not the eyelashes. The second it turns green, it's pop, hits me again.
Uh-huh.
And I'm, you know, and it catches me by surprise. So I jerk back and they're not getting any images.
Yeah, you got to force your eyes open.
So they tell me to do it again. I do this like 5 times. Oh. And every time I'm getting shot with but it's not perfect. Huh. And sometimes it's like I can see it go to red and it's shooting at me, and they're calling other people to come in. Well, I guess it was on auto. It wasn't on manual. So they're not hitting it's automatically shooting it at me. So they switched to manual mode.
And then you could get it?
Well, it still took forever because it's the trainee who's trying to do it. And she's getting me on. I'm like, oh, that was red. That was red. Why are you? I'm in my mind, I'm saying, why are you shooting the picture now? I'm on red.
Oh.
Finally, they get it, and I'm a little woozy at this point. They get both eyes, and they take me back to the office. And I say to them, as I lean back, I said, you know, maybe next time I'll save myself $60 and I'll just get that dilated.
Get the dilation. Yeah, I hate having my eyes dilated.
You don't want that. What if you had to go back to work? I said, I'm a teacher.
I've come back to work with my eyes dilated.
Yeah.
I really have. I just worked with my sunglasses
on. It's a scam because later the doc tried to pull up the images. He couldn't even pull the images up. He said, really? Oh, I don't know. We're having problems with our system. So I never even got to see the images.
Well, they're going
to
tell you that you've had a head trauma.
Yeah. He pulled up a picture of an eyeball and I could see the name. He didn't know I could see the name. It was someone else because he was just trying to see if he could pull anything up.
Uh-huh.
And I go, oh, that's not, I can tell that's not my eye right there. And yeah, got a chuckle out of that one. You know, because it's like a heat map you're looking at. I know. You can't tell.
I got to go in, and I was going to go into that same place, and now I'm reluctant. So you paid $60 out of your own pocket
$59.99, yeah, out of my, not covered by insurance. But then I'm sitting there, and the two women, as they're setting everything up, wiping down the equipment, getting ready for the doctor to come in, they start chatting. They get all chatty.
With you?
No, with each other.
Okay.
They don't even know I'm sitting there. Oh. And I'll tell you how I know that in a second. Because they decide they're going to start talking about the two doctors that work in this location.
Oh.
So they, and I'm just going to call them. The first guy they start talking about is Dr. Jones.
Okay.
I just call him that so I could play that music.
Oh, I see. I gotcha.
So they start talking about Dr. Jones, right? Oh, yeah, doctor. Well, he just has a lot going. The one woman said, he just has a lot going on in his up in his head there.
Ooh.
And the other woman's like, yeah.
That's not good.
And she's like, I actually like him. And the other lady's like, yeah, I actually like him too. And then I pipe up. I say, it's usually not a good sign when you say, I actually like him. It means nobody really likes them.
You said
and
that?
So I said that.
Did they get quiet?
They shoot me a look. Not yet. They shoot me a look, and they're like, oh, well, listen, don't worry about it, because you don't have Dr. Jones. You have Dr. Smith. And I say right back at them, I say, oh, so Dr. Smith is not as smart as Dr. Jones. And that shuts them up, because now I think they realize, or they're worried, I'm like maybe a little wild card. They're worried start talking to Dr. Smith, that these two ladies are talking about how Dr. Jones is the smart one in the office. Because they were going on and on about how he's got a lot going on in
his
brains.
That doesn't mean anything good if you say they've got a lot going on, though.
Well, they were talking about how smart he was, but like overly smart.
I know.
And I was just like, okay, so Dr. Smith just doesn't have a lot going on up there, huh? Oh, no. He's nice. He's so nice. You're going to really like him.
That's funny.
I'm just like, okay.
Oh.
And he was. He was really nice. But he couldn't pull up my pictures. So, you know, maybe next time I'm just going to request, Dr. Jones to come in.
It's funny.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so you're going to get an appointment there.
I'll let you know which doc I get.
How it goes for you.
Yeah.
Let me know. I'll tell you the real name off the air.
Okay. Celebrity most resembles?
Michael
Caine. I'm picturing Michael Caine for some
reason. No. More like Matthew Broderick. Like a Matthew Broderick.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sylvia had a doc who looked like Matthew Broderick. It was the weirdest thing. It threw me for a loop every single time. I just couldn't get past it. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get to it. Got a great guest for you. We're joined by Tess Gerritsen. Her new book out now is called Listen to Me. It is number 13 in the Rizzoli and Isles series. And look, this one is a lot of fun. I really enjoyed this one, mostly because this is the first book in this series that you, and if you haven't read any of the other books in the series, don't worry, this can be read as a standalone. But if you have, it's exciting because it's the first time we get to hear directly as a narrator from her point of view. We get to hear from Jane Rizzoli's mother, Angela, this Italian mother. And she is so funny. She's hilarious. She starts doing her best Jimmy Stewart impression from Rear Window. And she is suspicious of what her neighbors, she got new neighbors across the street, and she's very suspicious.
Oh, goody.
As to what's, and every time she sees something else, she's like calling up her daughter and saying, no, Jane, listen to me. You're not going to leave what's going over there. And Jane's like, yeah, she's a homicide detective with Boston PD. She doesn't have time for her mother's antics. And in fact, her mother starts actually calling the police department herself, convinced that something is going on. Of course, Jane doesn't have time for that. She's busily investigating a brutal murder of a nurse. There's a hit and run involved. Does not have time for her mother to play detective in the box.
Like I said, this one is a lot of fun. The mystery is interesting and will keep you guessing all the way up to the end. The characters, these are people you really want to spend
this
time with.
It's a really popular
enjoy
series.
Enjoy spending time with. I really enjoyed this book. I liked it a lot. The subplot involving Angela, especially, and her snooping. Really funny. There's a great entry to the series and another entry to the series. Check it out. This is called Listen to Me. And here is our conversation with Tess Gerritsen.
I was big into drama when I was in high school. It was my favorite class.
Of course it was. I mean, this is the best class. This is where you want to be. That's right.
You can be who you want to be, what you want to be, and
that's right.
They're the best people.
Yes. And theater teachers are the best of the best. So
They are. I mean, the one teacher I corresponded with for until he died at age something was my theater teacher.
Is that right? Really?
Yeah, I even dedicated a book to him. So,
Awesome. If one day I could get one of these kids.
Can you imagine, Dave, somebody dedicating a book to you? Yeah.
That'd be great.
Really nice.
That'd be great. By the way, if I was watching you last night, I saw that you had interviewed Dean Koontz.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. He was interesting.
Well, yeah, he seemed like an interesting guy. How was that? How did that come about?
Now, Amazon asked me to do it. They just said, hey, are you interested in interviewing Dean Koontz? I said, well, of course. But his internet, I think, was a little unstable. That was the only thing. But it was a fun interview. And he's an interesting guy. He has a couple of quirks that I found fascinating.
That's cool. Yeah. Did you enjoy
it? I can imagine.
Yeah. Was it more fun to be the interviewer or do you enjoy this process of being the interviewee?
It's easier being interviewed because you don't have to think of your next question. I think being a good interviewer requires so much preparation, and it requires, you know, you have to think on your feet. Mm-hmm. And it also requires a certain amount of control because sometimes your subject, like, off in the weeds, right? What do you do about that? That's right.
And before you know it, they're talking about theater teachers from years ago. And you're like, wait a second, we gotta talk about books here, for God's sakes. No, but speaking of books, Tess, listen, loved your new book, Listen to Me, lucky number 13. 13, can you believe it? The Rizzoli and Isles series, Listen to Me, Tess, what was it that inspired you to write this latest chapter in the series?
It's funny, I didn't really know if there was a 13th book coming, and I have been writing other stories in the meantime. Uh-huh.
It's been a minute, hasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it had to do with, I've always been interested in Jane's mom. As authors get older, we become, I think, more simpatico with older characters. Sure. We want to know more about people like us. Mm-hmm. And Jane's mom, even though she's been kind of comic relief and has been a good wife and mother, over the series of books, she has evolved. Things have changed in her life. You know, her life had an earthquake when her husband left her for another woman. Right. So now all of a sudden, she's on her own. She's finding herself. She's realizing she's more than just a wife and mother. And in this book, we get to see her really blossom. Because one of the things she is also a suburban housewife.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, we all look out our kitchen windows. We all look out and see what's going on down the street.
Of course.
And what if she sees something that, it's a little odd. The other theme is that as we get older, people stop listening to us.
That's
you know, you walk down the street and everybody looks at the cute girl in the mini skirt. Nobody looks at the middle-aged woman. Yeah. So we start to become invisible, even though we have all these years of experience and this accumulated wisdom. We should be listened to more now than we were when we were young, but it goes the other way.
I don't mind the invisibility, I have to say.
Yeah.
I like the middle-aged cloak of invisibility. Mm. I think it's... It's liberating a little bit.
You're absolutely right. It's protective in some ways. And that's why the best spies should be middle-aged women.
I agree.
Oh, yeah.
There was that great spy series, Mrs. Polifax. Do you remember Mrs. Polifax?
Yeah. Well, and that's a book. I'm writing a book now about a female spy in her 60s. And she, you know, she reflects on the fact that now she's finally become anonymous. And this is like,
wait to read spy. That's so exciting. I can't wait to read that. That's one of my favorite type of things to read. Mm. So Angela was probably really fun to write for. Was she just a different kind of thing for you?
She was so much fun because she's not like Jane. She has these observations that maybe a lot of us wouldn't have, you know, but like noticing when something is different, something is wrong.
Yeah.
Being bothered by the fact that people across the street always keep their shades down. Mm-hmm. That's kind of, you know, what maybe most of us wouldn't care, but she cares.
Yeah.
And the real challenge for Angela isn't that she sees these things. It's that nobody, her own daughter thinks that she's just being nosy.
Yeah.
Doesn't realize that her mom is actually onto something.
Yeah.
Right. And speaking of her daughter, I do love the mother-daughter relationship that you hit on here. And it's almost a recurring theme throughout the book, but especially with Jane and Angela. And I did slap my knee at Jane's ringtone when her mom calls her, which is the psycho theme. I rushed out and I'm going to put that on when my mom calls. just kidding, Mom. Not yet. So was this mother-daughter relationship, is that something you really wanted to explore more? You know, you've touched upon it in the other books, but is that really something you felt like it was time to dive a little deeper in on this one?
Yeah, you know, the whole theme of this book is mothers and daughters, because, you know, one of the other things happening, of course, is a crime that's being investigated. Mm-hmm. No, I had a good relationship with my mother, but the fact she was Chinese also made it complex. I mean, there's a whole range of new movies that are out now exploring the mother-daughter relationship, from Red Panda to Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yes.
And it's a very complex relationship, certainly among Chinese and Chinese Americans.
Interesting.
Mothers who are Chinese don't always do a good job of showing their daughters how much they love them. Mm. Mm. It often comes out in criticism. It comes out in you're too fat, or it's strange to think, but that is how they show that they love you. Sure. And that's what I grew up with. So I just thought that because our relationships are so complicated and different cultures have different ways of looking at moms, this was the way to bring out what it might be like to be the daughter of an Italian mother.
Yeah. Yeah. A little overbearing. I can imagine.
It'd be fine.
The sons are worship. The daughter's something else. Yeah.
Yeah. And that is true. Yeah.
That is absolutely true.
Yeah. The man is the most important.
And, Angie's definitely a one-woman neighborhood watch party, as you talked about, and she truly ascribes to the if you see something, say something maxim. And it just made me curious to wonder if you ever found yourself in the position that you had to, you know, drop a dime on someone. You ever have to? You ever find yourself?
No.
What? No. Never.
I live in this really safe little corner of Maine where nothing bad.
Oh, you're in Maine.
Oh, you're up in Maine.
Oh, nice. Oh,
yeah. One of the lowest crime rates in the country. And it's funny because so many scary books are written that are set in Maine, but nothing scary much happens here.
Oh, that's really funny. Yeah, Maine's beautiful, especially this time of year, too.
But yeah, it's like the perfect time. The thing about the neighborhood, though, is I loved about bringing Angela is her neighbors are so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, who is that Navy SEAL across the street that keeps on pumping iron in his front window?
I know.
You
know, and then, a nice
and then a couple down the street. Yeah. So yeah, it's fun to bring in all these eccentric people that live in her neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Now, be honest, the Maine accent, does that grate on your nerves a little bit? Do you hear a lot of that up there?
I find the Maine accent quite comforting.
Do you?
Strangely.
Oh, there you go.
I find the Boston accent a little more grating.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
I can see that.
Yeah, but it was funny. The first time I drove over the border into Maine, I was living in Hawaii for 12
years. Oh, wow.
So we came to Maine on a holiday, and I heard the Maine accent from the toll booth taker. And there was something that just felt like it was down home. It felt like this was where I belonged. And I hope. You know, I hope. Later we moved here.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And, I was joking. It is I do enjoy that accent. It is a nice one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a lot of family in New Hampshire. Very similar. So you were a physician before you became a best-selling writer.
Yes.
How did you go from, I'm assuming you were working full-time, to yes. Were you writing books early in the morning like some people do? Were you getting up early to do it? How were you doing it?
I should tell you that I started off knowing I was a storyteller when I was 7 years old.
Okay, so you knew that was your calling.
I knew that's what I wanted to do. Yeah. And you know, here's a call out to wonderful teachers. My teachers told me I was supposed to be a writer.
Wow.
That's great.
My father, who's a traditional Chinese American dad, said it was no way to make a living. You won't be able to support yourself. I love biology. I was interested in medicine anyway. So it wasn't that big a leap to go to medical school.
Wow.
And my first opportunity to really write was after I went on maternity leave.
Okay.
It was the break I needed. Strangely enough, it was a break, but because both my sons slept all the time.
That's great.
I had to wake them up to feed them. That's how much they slept.
Wow.
They were perfect. They were perfect little babies. Oh. And that's how I started to write books.
Wow. Huh. Wow. So did you go back after maternity leave to?
I went back part-time.
Part-time.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's amazing. And then, so when you're a 7 year old and you're getting feedback and you're writing, what kind of things were you writing?
I was a big fan of Nancy Drew.
Oh, yeah.
I was writing mysteries.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you grow up in Hawaii then at all?
I grew up in San Diego.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I got married. I went to medical school in the Bay Area in San Francisco. And met my husband there. And then we moved to Hawaii because that's where his family was living.
Nice.
So that's how, everywhere I've lived, it's always been in a beautiful city.
Lived in vacation spots. Yeah.
Yes. I've always lived near the sea and I don't think I can ever live away from the sea. There's something, I think when you grow up on the coast, it feels strange to not know there's an ocean or an escape route nearby.
I know. There's that horizon line too that's really comforting to look at, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. We're here in Colorado, so pretty far.
We have the mountains.
But we got the mountains, you know, so that's why we came here. But Tess, and speaking of kids, and in addition to being a former physician and current best-selling author, you find the time to dip your toe into the filmmaking business as well. Tell me a little bit about your latest, this documentary. I was checking it out last night. I'm definitely going to have to watch this one. This looks fascinating. It's called Magnificent Beast. Your son directed it. What was your involvement in this doc?
We did this film together. It was inspired because, well, first of all, my father was a cook. He had his own restaurant in San Diego. So I'm really into the culinary scene, and also because I'm Chinese, you know, food is really important to us.
Sure.
So I was traveling in Turkey and I was hungry for bacon, and you know, you can't get bacon because it's a Muslim country.
Yes.
And that got me started thinking about food taboos. Mm. Why would a culture or a religion forbid a very nutritious meat that also happens to taste pretty good?
I taste damn good, yes.
So I began thinking about taboos and what, why would you do this? So it led back to the pig. There are multiple food taboos. You know, the Hindus don't eat beef, and I guess Navajo don't like to eat fish, and there's all sorts of things. But pork is the biggest taboo. Right. So I told my son, who's already a filmmaker, he's actually paid to do some documentary work. Let's do a book. Let's do a movie on pigs and taboos.
Wow.
And the deeper we got into this, the more we realized, you know, pigs hold a very specific space in our in human culture. We have either really negative things to say about them. You know, you're dirty as a pig, you're a filthy pig, you know, or we think of them as babe, you know, a cute little piglet.
Yeah.
So it got to... the film got to a point where we realized it was the inherent character of the pig itself that was at the center of our story. Mm-hmm. And we ended up taking this journey that just went from pig as the kid, as the animal that sleeps in your bed. And some of these people actually have pigs sleeping in their beds because they're part of family. And it went to food. And finally, we circled back to where did the taboo come from? It was a really historic, a journey into history, because I mean, I was an anthropology major. So this was sort of right up in my wheelhouse.
Now, do you still eat pig?
I do.
I'm just curious.
Well, I'm curious to see after doing the doc if you anything.
I was just wondering. I have seen pigs on vacation with their families.
Yeah, they're very smart.
Yeah, with little harnesses on, like a dog. Yeah,
they're clean. They can be really cute.
Yeah,
can be.
They're not a dog though. I mean, they're smarter than dogs, but they have the trouble with having a pig as a pet. Is they're too intelligent, and they have very strong personalities, and they're a little bit like cats in that way. Cats will do their own thing; they won't listen to you.
No,
tell me about it. We got one. If you're looking for to adopt a cat up there in Maine, we got one we can ship up there to you. Just don't let my daughter find. Did you ever check to make sure when your son's calling you that, or when you're calling your son, you listen to the ringtone and make sure he doesn't have.
Do you know what your ringtone is? True.
I don't know what my son's ringtone is, what my ringtone is for my son, but I'm afraid to find out.
It's different with sons. The son-mother relationship is different than the daughter-mother, I think. So
I think it probably is. I feel very close to my sons, so it's I don't have any daughters. I have granddaughters, and I adore them.
That's great.
It's a different kind of relationship.
Yeah, it is, I'm sure. And do you guys make a horror movie together too?
We did. That was the other thing we did. Yeah, we made a movie called Island Zero. And we want to do a low budget horror. I love horror films.
I
love low budget horror films because you get into the character as opposed to all these special effects and these gizmos. Yeah, that isn't as exciting to me. So we did a horror film that's based in Maine. It's set on a little island off the coast in the wintertime as Christmas is about to come. And as you'll find out, if you ever come to Maine, these islands depend on the ferry. If the ferry doesn't come, you don't get your food, you don't get your gas. And this little island, the ferry stops coming. And they don't know why, because their phones have all gone dead. So they're isolated. They don't know what's happening. And then people on the island start to die. And it's really kind of a horror film that has to do with global warming and what's happening under our oceans.
Oh, wow. That sounds great.
Sound great.
Well, it was an education in filmmaking because we chose to go with Screen Actors Guild for our main characters. Okay. I wrote the script. My son directed. And what it mean was just dealing with the business side of filmmaking. That was hard because every day we had a crew of like 18 to 20 people plus the actors. And all the paperwork and the legal aspects of getting insurance, you know, and going to the Screen Actors Guild, which is complex. So we learned a lot, and we realized that making documentaries was a lot less complicated.
Smart. Yes. Well, as a writer also, you just have to deal with yourself and on occasion your editor, and who I'm assuming at this point, 13 books into the series, hopefully it doesn't have a whole lot of influence over you. Or I don't know, how much sway does your editor have? Or is it at this point, you know, you got this?
I always listen to my editors. I trust them. And that's, you know, if you don't listen to your editor, you're going down a dangerous path.
I
mean, when I turn in my books, I feel that they are as good as they can be, that they are, you know, maybe some tweaking, they're probably ready to go to production. And I've been very gently edited all my life. I mean, sometimes I'll get like a 3-page single space letter from the editor saying this part didn't make sense, or, you know, stuff like that. But I have never gotten to the point where I felt like my editor was changing the direction of the book.
That's good.
You have a lot of different storylines in this one. a lot of subplots kind of coming fast. Are you an outliner or are you like seat of the pants?
I'm seat of the pants, which is hard to believe when you look at this book.
It is. There's so much going very on hard. Here.
It looks like I must have had this detailed blueprint.
Yes. Sticky notes and arrows.
Well, I will tell you how this book started. It started with Angela's voice.
Yes.
Right. In her neighborhood. She sees something. And I did not know what was going on. I really did not know what she was. I just knew that she had all these crazy neighbors and that somehow out of that mix, something would pop out. I also had the story of of the dead nurse. I know I opened it with her, but I really didn't know where that story was going either. So it's really kind of miraculous how these threads start off. And then by the end, I find out what is the unifying, theme of the story. And it's, again, it's like, it's mothers and daughters.
Yeah. Interesting. Did you always start out that way? Or when you started out in your career, are you meticulously outlined? And then the more you go along, you're like, screw it. I got this.
I've never been able to outline.
Never, really?
No, I try it. I try outlining it. And always, by the time I get going, following the outline, I'm really bored because I know what's going to happen. So the fun of writing it this way, even though it's a terrible way to write. I mean, I probably age 5 years with every book, right? So I should be like, imagine 20 years old now.
Stressful. Yeah.
I start off with the opening situation. Mm-hmm. But then as I write, little by little things start to reveal themselves to me. And sometimes in the middle of it, I will make a drastic change. I'll say, oh, this is not working. But if I went back and fixed this, it changes everything. You know, the example I always use is I wrote this book called Vanish. And it starts off with somebody waking up in a body bag in the morgue. Still alive. And it morphed into a hostage crisis in the hospital because he's sent there to recover and he wakes up and he kills a security guard and takes hostages.
Okay.
And one of the hostages is Jane Rizzoli, who's in labor and about to have her baby. So that's as far as I saw. And I got midway through that story. I didn't know why he was doing this. I didn't know how he ended up in the body bag. I just knew this is a great beginning. Yeah. So I get to the middle and I'm bored because there's something about a hostage crisis, which we see frequently around the world. And the one thing I had that was wrong with this story is that the hostage taker was a man. That's something that happens all the time. And somehow it just didn't seem very interesting to me.
Interesting.
So what I do when I get this plot block, I just walk away from the book for a couple of weeks. And in that interim, as I was driving to a book event in Texas, and it was a very long drive, 4 hours of driving, I realized what my problem was, that it was a man in the body bag. And I thought, well, but if I made it her a woman, this changes everything.
Yeah, it does.
Because she's not doing it because she's psycho. She's not doing it because she's trying to be in control. She's doing it because she's terrified. She has no other way out. Wow. And so I went home and I wrote the rest of the book, just pretending that it had always been a woman in the body bag. So that's how my first drafts go. They're really sort of explorations down blind alleys. I don't fix anything the first draft. I just keep on. I want that forward momentum. Mm-hmm. And then the second, third, fourth draft, I go back and make everything fit together.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Very cool. We also get to see another surprising side to Maura in this book. Are you always looking for ways to kind of get your... And that's what I love, you know, you get to see different things. And we're 13 books in, and yet you're still finding new things out about your characters. Is that something that's important for you to have them evolve as you go along? I'm guessing it must be.
Well, we saw from Maura, I can't remember which book it was, probably second or third book, probably third book, that she already plays a piano, that she has a grand piano in her house. And that has to do with Maura being a reflection of me. If I know how to do something, Maura knows how to do something.
Oh, that's really funny. That's
so we know that she plays a piano. We know that she's probably pretty good at it. And I have friends who play in doctors' orchestras. It's a peculiar thing, you know. Doctors seem to be musically oriented as well. And there are some medical centers or medical, you know, networks where the doctors will get together and will play as an orchestra. Wow. So that I just thought I would put that in there because we do get to see a little bit more of her. We do get to see that she is, poor Maura, she's... she's plagued by perfectionism. Yeah, it is the bane of her life. Mm-hmm. And she hates to make a public mistake. And so this performance where she becomes the featured pianist in this doctor's orchestra is really quite stressful for her. So it does show you that, she looks perfect on the outside, but she's not, and she knows it, and she doesn't like to reveal this.
That's the orchestra I want to see, because that's the one time you'll never hear, is there a doctor in the house? because they're all up on the stage, you know.
They're all on stage, right?
You're never more safe as you would be as seeing an orchestra full of doctors. Yeah. Do you have any interesting writing quirks that you employ as you set about to embark on a new novel or as you're writing? Any superstitions?
Probably my most unusual quirk, besides not knowing what I'm writing about until I get midway through.
There's that,
I write my first drafts with pen and paper.
Oh, that is unusual.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. And I'm peculiar that it must be, one of these pens. It's just like a big round.
Like a Bic. Yeah.
And the paper must be unlined. I like unlined typing paper.
That is weird.
I think it has to do with the lines feel like they're constraining to me. And if it's just a blank piece of paper, it's as if you're allowed to do what you want to do.
Wow. And then do you transpose that or do you give that to somebody?
Oh, no. Nobody can read my handwriting. I'm the one who has to type it. I mean, I type really, really fast. That's not what's stopping me from doing first drafts online.
It's the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the process. It's the fact that if I see something on the screen, I feel I have to perfect it and I end up editing myself.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. Yeah, I definitely understand that.
Yeah, first draft should be about being playful. Yeah. Second draft should be about making sure things actually look okay.
Makes sense. Yeah.
You write in cursive or print?
Cursive. Oh, print's too slow. Yeah. And not only that, I write with a lot of doctor shorthand. I mean, doctors, you know, when they write their prescriptions, you can't read a damn thing.
No wonder. Yeah. No wonder you can't give it to
anybody. Because we're writing our own shorthand. We have a standard shorthand.
Oh,
likely
I see.
Story. I'm not buying that. You know, kids these days, they don't even learn cursive. Our daughter doesn't know. She can't read cursive. She literally has never learned cursive.
I think that's a big mistake. I think it's a terrible thing. Because I know, of course, they can type, right? They can type really fast. Yeah. But if you're stuck in the middle of somewhere with only a piece of paper and a pen, it'll take you forever to print it out.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, writing is really fast.
Your mind will start to wander away from what you're doing by the time you finish.
Yeah. All right, Tess, it is time now for our segment that we call Quick Six. These are six quick questions in which we find out just a little bit more about you. Here we go. Tess, what is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
Oh, I've been watching this show on Acorn TV called Good Karma Hospital.
Okay.
Oh, you like those doctor shows.
It's about a hospital in India, and an English half Indian doctor answers the ad, goes to work, and finds out she's over her head with all the crises. And it's a continuing series; it's been going on for a while.
That sounds great.
We'll check that one out.
What fictional world or place would you like to visit?
Oh, fictional.
Fictional. Yes.
Doesn't have to be fantasy.
I would love to go to the Shire.
Yes, I know.
I want to live in the Shire with, like, you know, from Lord of the Rings. Yeah.
Yes.
Of course, yeah. Who wouldn't? Or maybe you just want to go to New Zealand. Let's face it.
Yes.
How about this, Tess? Give us one of your top five favorite movies of all time.
Galaxy Quest.
Oh wow. How much fun is that movie? That is
It's one of those movies that I just want to watch every single New Year's. I just watch it again and again and again.
Huh.
I have to put in, as you know, because you can see that I'm a big Tolkien fan. I loved, you know, the Lord of the Rings trilogy. I thought that Peter Jackson did a fantastic job. It's funny, I'm going to science fiction and fantasy.
No, I'm so interested by that.
It really is. That's not what you're writing.
No, it's funny. A lot of people don't like, haven't heard of this. Oh God, what's it? Oh, I'm thinking of the time. It's a time, you know, I better not even mention this movie because I can't remember the name of it. I will say that this is a movie that a lot of people didn't like, but I love The English Patient.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Mm.
It took a good book and it made it even better. You know, it's not very often that movies surpass the books, but I love that.
And people, that is a very polarizing movie. And if you want to look at somebody who did not like it.
I think women liked it better than men did. Because it was so romantic.
It was romantic. I have memories of sitting though and watching it with that guy and complaining.
And he hated it.
Yes. So,
man, did I hate that movie.
I mean, it is polarized. It's a little bit like, you know, Moulin Rouge. I hated that movie and everybody else loved it.
We love that movie. Yeah, we've seen it a million times. Yeah, okay. There you go. That's funny.
Okay.
It is a little frantic.
It is.
How about a top five favorite book?
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I always go back to this wonderful, actually it's a mini series now. That's The Shell Seekers by
I love that.
Yes. Yes. It is incredibly not only romantic but heart-wrenching.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great book. I read that a long time ago and it meant something to me. Yeah.
How about this, Tess? Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
No, I don't. I don't sing karaoke. I'm sorry. My son does, but I refuse.
Oh, you'll be the supportive mother. Okay, very good.
No.
Nope.
Last but not least. Yeah. Last but not least, what book are you currently reading?
Right now, I'm reading a book called. Isn't it terrible how titles get?
Oh yeah, I can never remember the title.
I have trouble too.
Never can.
Freezing Order. It's called Freezing Order by Bill Browder.
Hmm. Okay.
It's nonfiction. It's really kind of a grim story about money laundering and global corruption going all the way up to Vladimir Putin.
Wow.
It's just something that I've had to read because of my current spy novel.
Oh, cool.
But it's also a really, really good book.
Right. I'm so excited for your next. I shouldn't tell you this because this book's coming
out.
We're
going to talk about Listen to Me, yes.
But I am very excited about your next book, too. Yeah.
Well, I'm halfway through the second draft, so it looks like it's actually going to happen.
All right. Yay. Very good.
My proposed title is Spyville.
Oh, I like it.
That's a good one. All right. Well, Tess, listen, thanks so much. Really enjoyed your book. Listen to Me. Can't wait to check out the doc also, Magnificent Beast. That looks really good.
Yes, it's available on Amazon and iTunes.
Perfect. All right. Perfect. Thanks so much for joining us, Tess, and good luck with the book.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. The Inside Flap. All right, there you go. Thank you so much to Tess Gerritsen. If you're out there listening, hey, get your eyes checked. Go to your, eye doctor and let me know how it goes. If you decide to do that little gag when they shoot the air into your eye, let me know. I'd love to hear about it. Don't give anybody a heart attack out there, though. That's not good. My name is Dave Medicus. That'll do it for us on this Inside Chat edition, and we will see you next time.
Adios.
Oh, no. He's nice.